Mr. and Mrs. Dunn Hedges, right?
Yep.
And Mrs. Hedges, what is your question?
Okay.
It's very nice that you come to visit me today. And for the Historical Society, I think this is the 18th of July, if I'm not mistaken, right? 18th, 1985. And it's an absolutely sparkling, beautiful morning. And I'm really looking forward to this interview. I thank you so much for coming. I'd like first to get some biological background done. Were you born in this area?
I was born in Pocatello, Idaho.
Oh my goodness. I've just gone through here on the train. I took a trip to California back on the train.
My father was a missionary to the Blackfoot Indians when I was born. And Pocatello was a major junction point at that time. She got ready to join them, she went by train.
Oh, that's wonderful. And what faith was your father?
He was a Presbyterian.
Presbyterian minister. And were your people then from England? The name Hedges or
basically England and Holland. Holland comes into it somehow.
I understand. It's exactly my husband's lineage. Mm-hmm. when you were young, what do you think that you had, that you showed special skills and talents when you were?
Oh, no. I just was a kid and grew up.
And when did you begin to show such talent, artistic?
Well, I don't know how to answer that. Because I was trained as an architect and basically
yes.
That's how I earned my living. I didn't begin to paint until I was about 60.
I see. Oh, that is marvelous. I'm really surprised to hear that. But I thought perhaps as a young child, you know, you might have had some special lessons or some special exposure to the arts in some way that sort of made you go
as long as I was always interested in art.
You went to museums. And where did you go to school?
I went to a whole series of schools. I finally graduated from Palo Alto High School in Palo Alto, California. Went for a year at Stanford and then transferred to Michigan. Finished schooling in Michigan, University of Michigan.
And so really most of your early life you spent born in the middle of the country, and then in the middle west, really.
No.
But Idaho is not considered.
No, that's
that's the west.
It's on the other side of the Rockies.
Oh, okay. That's right. I have to stop and think about that. That's right. But we came through Reno.
Mm-hmm. We came probably came to a room.
Yes, we did, but anyway, we came to the through Sierra Madras as well. Were you, then, and you went to school in Palo Alto, what did you say?
Mm-hmm.
And where, what school was that?
Palo Alto High School.
High school. Did your parents then move down to that area?
Mm-hmm.
And then you went to Stanford? Well, Stanford.
Right.
Stanford. In California.
Mm-hmm.
And what ever brought you to the East Coast?
Well, Stanford was just completely beyond me financially. And I was working my way through school. I had a friend, a boyfriend, who I transferred to Michigan and was in the School of Architecture, and he wrote me and said, why don't you come on here and join me? It was that simple.
At Michigan, the tuition then at Michigan was easier?
Much easier. It's a state university. And,
yes.
At that time, an out-of-state student could go there for $300 tuition, which I could manage.
And that was in Eastern City?
No, that's in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Ann Arbor, I see. I bet my Michigan University, so there's one in Ypsilanti and one in Ann Arbor and one in
Eastern City.
So, and then, and did you meet Mrs.
I met Peg on the street in Ann Arbor.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Nature took on from there.
Were you studying there too? What was your
key? Well, I was mainly the guy. No, everyone just, you know, either went to Michigan State or University of Michigan. Which is the thing you did.
Were you from that area?
I was from Cadillac, Michigan.
Oh, yes.
The northern part of the world.
Oh, yes. So, then you and Don met and were married at... were you married there at Cadillac, Michigan?
Yes.
And then you moved to New Hope? How did you ever get to New Hope?
Well, we moved to Philadelphia because Don had a brother-in-law, Russell Block, who had a civic planning office. And Don worked in the office again for a year.
Two years.
And then how did you find New Hope? Was it through?
Well, the Depression came on about then, and Russell closed his office and moved out to his farm, which he had just bought near New Hope.
That is Russell Black.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we lived in the major. And he helped him build a farm, helped him build a stone wall, and do things around the property because no one had any work. And I was pregnant.
The baby was born in the guest room at
no,
Russell
Black's? No, it was born in Philadelphia, but we were living
there. Well, you were living there, yes. So, well, that was your daughter, and your daughter's name is?
Mary Todd.
Oh, say. Mary Todd Hedges, and now, where is Mary Todd?
She is 53 years old and lives in Charleston, West Virginia.
You have a daughter, 53 years old? Oh, my goodness. You're much too young to have a daughter,
53 years old.
Well, we've been married 54 years. Oh, my, that's wonderful. Well, congratulations. I hope that John and I can make 54 years. I'd like to be around for another few years to enjoy my children and grandchildren. Don, how did you get started in the architecture business here?
Sort of by chance. There were no jobs for draftsmen anywhere. New Jersey had a relief system for men who had professional offices and were closed, and they got $12 a week subsistence money. There was just nothing. Peg and I had always had a liking for shops of the sort we eventually had, and we had nothing to lose, and we were so young we didn't know the pitfalls, and we went ahead and opened a small old shop in New Hope, which at that time was just a very primitive little mill town, but had just started 2 art shows a year at Phillips Mill. And it's hard for you to realize how primitive New Hope was at that time.
I'd love to know. Describe it.
I saw New Hope the first time. I came up here with my sister who was working for the Philadelphia Tri-State Regional Planning Federation. A brand new thing. Planning had never been heard of before. And this was one of the first state sponsored attempts. And she came up here in this area to try and find out what communities had maps. There were very few. There were very few communities that maintained any records or maps of any sort. And the first time I ever came here, we drove up here in 1926. And we paid a toll at Hatboro and at 2 intermediate places, at the Paxson Estate in Lahanska, and at a small tollkeeper's place outside of New Hope. And in 1926, this road was not a public road.
You had to pay a toll to cross over a bridge?
No, to run
just
on the highway.
Just to run on the road.
To run on the highway between toll keepers.
You mean 202, the Paxson Farm on 202?
Well, there was no such thing as 202. This was, I guess, the New York Philadelphia Pike at that point.
Oh my goodness, that is really amazing. What kind of a toll did they collect? Was it very costly?
I don't know. It might have been 5 cents to.
But it was a toll.
To go from Hatboro to the next town. Well, we met.
Goodness.
At a wedding in 1935. We met a family from Harrisburg, and they said that we were from New Hope. This man took out his wallet and he said, "Our family fortune comes from New Hope." So we own the toll bridge at New Hope, Library.
Oh, goodness. And what family is that, do you remember? Albert Rickard? Related to Dr. Rickard?
A twin. I don't remember the name. Darlington. Darlington was the name of the family.
Yeah.
And at that time, one of the Darlingtons was a Episcopal bishop of Harrisburg. But, a few cents over a long enough period accumulates.
Oh, I should say, imagine the traffic that came over that road just to get to the toll bridge, to get over to New Jersey.
But there wasn't much traffic. You realize that, New Hope. Most of the streets in New Hope weren't even paved in 1926.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know. Really? Were they just dirt roads or cinder roads?
Dirt.
A real country town.
And the town was owned and operated and controlled by the paper mill, which was owned by the Rublin family of New Jersey.
The Rublin family of New Jersey. Now, was the paper mill down on the river then?
Oh yes, the paper mill. Paper mill was on the river in 1812.
But there were other mills as well, right?
Well, see, there was the bag mill, which was also owned by them, but it was an entirely separate operation.
So I'm getting a picture then of New Hope in 1926 as a really extremely rural area.
And there were, the barges were operating on the canal at that time.
In 26 they were?
Oh, yes.
When did they stop? Wasn't it in the...
Well, 1932 or 3, when somebody invented a thing called an oil burner.
I remember my father so. But tell me, and I can remember those days when the oil burner was something.
Well, the restaurants like the Black Bass,
yeah.
The River's Edge, those were Saturday night tie-up places in whorehouses for the farm job.
Absolutely. I think that this is something that we're afraid to say.
And New Hope was considered such a rough town that people in Lambertville didn't let their children come across.
Oh my goodness. New Hope has had a very shady... Absolutely. Well, she's really an interesting little town now today as well. But isn't it amazing that that we think of New Hope as being such a lovely artistic community today, and yet the past was really had a very earthy kind of beginning, didn't it, with all the canal men loose on the river. That must have been a very hard life. I understand there was something like
everybody's life was hard in 26. Your house wasn't very warm. You didn't have washers and dryers. You didn't have air conditioning. You didn't have anything.
Yes, and I think because I grew up in that area, you know, I remember it extremely well. We didn't have shoes from the time school stopped until school started again. And, I would be sent to the store for one item. Go to the store and get one item. We didn't go to the store and just throw things in our basket like we do today. You know, go and get a can of peas, Rita, or go and get a pound of ground beef, something like that. You know. And I was growing up in those days, I remember now. I think that people don't remember, too, the salaries that were paid us in those days. My first job was in 1939, which is beyond that. But I earned $7 a week. Now this is the kind of wages that people earned during the Depression if they were lucky enough to have jobs. Yes.
Well, $12 was considered a subsistence amount of money for a man and his family. When we built our shop, and we paid the carpenters were paid 40 cents an hour. And the foreman got 75 cents.
When you built your shop. And you built that in what?
1936.
In 36? Mm-hmm. And what are they being paid today?
$12.50
an hour. Yeah. Things have changed a great deal, haven't they? One wonders how they these hardworking men supported families and that kind of money. But I understand they did reasonably well.
Well, everything was cheap. You could get a standing rib roast for, you know, $2.50.
Yes. Now it's $20.50 would be a good price. And a loaf of bread was what, about a nickel? And
there was even an ice cream cone for me.
Oh, I remember the 5 cent ice cream cone, I should say.
Well, the little main street in New Hope used to have street trees. Both sides of the street and almost continuously, and one of the reasons they went out of, they died, was the fact that there was an ice cream parlor where the village store is now, and they dumped the salt water from the ice cream freezer into the street and killed the trees.
Oh, terrible. But there were trees all lining. Tell me about your craft shop. You started, you seem to have all kinds of courage starting a craft shop when you did. And what kind of crafts did you
do? Well, Peg and I had both done some things. We made batiks when we were living in Philadelphia, and we were just sort of on the edge of craft stuff. And we called it the New Hope Craft Shop. Actually, it was just a retail gift shop because there aren't enough good crafts, and at that period you couldn't sell good crafts. So it was a store that carried nice merchandise.
Porcelains?
Yeah, more porcelain.
Gifts?
Pottery.
Pottery.
Things like sort of glass, china, and eventually had clothing, jewelry. It grew, and it was very small. It grew. been Peg's shop completely since 1938.
That's a long time.
When I began getting into architecture.
Well, tell me, which store is it now? Is it across from the bank or across from Mother's?
Right across from the bank parking lot. It's now called the Sloan Ranger.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that. Then there's a leather store next near it.
There's a brown bag.
And the brown bag shoe store.
And Hayes Fuller Studio is on the north side.
At what studio?
Hayes Fuller Studio.
Oh, Hayes Fuller Studio. It's changing so much down there. There are new things happening every day. And I see the old drugstore on the corner is now an absolutely huge toy store. And it's quite a spellbinder. But what has happened? What is Sloan? What is it? Sloan Ranger.
S-L-O-A-N-E.
And I wonder what they sell.
Well, they have somewhat the same kind of merchandise we have, but maybe more expensive. They're just starting, so they haven't. We had a lot of space. They had quite a ways to go yet to fill the space up.
I loved your shop, incidentally. I know which shop it is now. And you had some beautiful pottery.
It was entirely due to Peg. I had nothing to do with the shop that.
Oh, my goodness. Then you started in the architectural business.
My first job as a registered architect was at Bucks County Playhouse.
That's what I understand. And I really would like to get into that. I imagine, how were you contacted to, was this a building to restore the building?
A group of five or six young couples actually, living here, all of whom had some money. And they got together, and at that point, the mill was actually grinding grain on a contract basis down there. The farmer brought his bags in and ground. These people decided that they wanted to build a community center. But the high school had no facilities. Other than the high school, it was very new. The high school was only built in 1929. And they wanted to be a help to the school system, but they built a community center out in the playhouse. Then they, through one of the members of their group, they became very much interested in doing a summer theater. At that period, summer was a summer theater in Dennis and Kate. And maybe one or two others, but very, very few. Summer theaters were popular because there was no summer theater in New York. There was no air conditioning, so all the theaters closed. As a consequence, a fine actress like Ellen Hayes or somebody was willing to come out to a place like New York for a very small fee just to keep her name in front of the public. And after World War II, when air conditioning became general, summer theaters just went right down.
Well, that was a very short period of prosperity for them.
Right.
You built that in 39?
It was the day we started to tear it apart. The day before, it had been grinding grain.
Oh, my goodness, isn't that just amazing? And it had been it had been functioning for a good long time before you started tearing it apart.
Oh, years. Probably 100 years, I suppose.
Particular mill was owned by Harry's?
It was owned by a man by the name of Brown at that time. Mr. Perry, Perry's owned the what is now the Golden Gate Gallery building, and they owned the right-of-way to the river through there.
I see.
But they had gotten rid of the mill quite a long time ago.
Excuse me.
And
Mr. Brown purchased it?
Yeah.
I see. And then did these young couples that were just active in the community? Were they artists? Were they people from the theater that wanted to start a theater?
No, they weren't from the theater. No, these were all kids at that time who had, as I said, some enough income so that they could invest some money in a probably non-profitable operation. None of them had any, I don't think, had any idea that there would be any return from it, which of course they never did.
Oh, that's really quite a story, isn't it? I understand that the people that really sort of were behind this as well, there were some people from Broadway, is that right? Was there Richard Bennett, for instance? Did he have something to do with the...
Well, he came down here, but he had no financial interest in it.
I see. Do you remember who the people were that contacted you originally? Do you remember any of their names?
Well, Mr. and Mrs. Child from Wilmore. Mr. and Mrs. Cole from Newhall. Mr. and Mrs. Fallon. Mr. and Mrs. Henry Chapin.
And important names in our community today. Don Walker certainly had Broadway connections and connections in New York.
Well, he was the one who had the dream about making the theater. The rest of them just went along with the idea.
Mm-hmm. And the Bonsbys, of course, were Mr. Bonsby was an artist, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the Childs were what?
He was an artist.
Also an artist.
The Coles were part of textile. Mr. Cole was part of the textile operation in Yardley. And the Chapins, Mrs. Chapin ran a farm, and Henry was a writer.
Henry Chapin. And tell me, did that sort of trigger then the influx of all the celebrities from New York?
It changed the community completely. From the first night it opened,
it changed.
New Hope was never the same town again.
And before that, there were a lot of artists here, were there not? This was considered quite an artistic
community. I wouldn't say a lot, but probably 10 or 15, perhaps. Most of them taught in Philadelphia. Schools in Philadelphia. And they had come here as early as 1912.
I understand. Before we got up to the opening of the Playhouse, but before that, we had a rather well-populated community of artists just north of us on the river, right? Is that right?
Well, no, they were pretty scattered.
They were scattered.
It wasn't any tightly. There were about four families that were real close together, and then there were others on the fringe of it, and then there were some artists that lived here that those artists wouldn't have anything to do with.
Oh, is that really so?
Sure.
I didn't know that. I thought they were a very tightly knit group.
Well, younger artists couldn't get in the door.
Oh, really? Oh, my
no
goodness.
Way.
Poor young people, they always have to struggle in that kind of doors, don't they? I really feel sorry for them. But I understand there was a Leith Ross, Leith Ross, and
John Fallonsby, Daniel Garber,
Spencer,
Renfield,
Nye.
Bill Nye was a young artist, and he was considered a madman and wasn't permitted to
in the group. Why was he considered a madman? Was it his style?
Mostly because he was young, and he was very much influenced by Kandinsky, and was trying to produce his own version of Kandinsky. And these other men were absolutely strictly academic painters, and they would tolerate no deviation from anything.
They were academic painters, but they were in the Impressionist school, so yeah. They were...
Well, one of the some. Well, I think there were some Impressionists, and I think there were some just American landscape painters.
Mm-hmm. How about Ben Pickett? Wasn't he sort of both?
No, Pickett was a journeyman painter and was a true primitive.
A primitive.
And, he wasn't considered anything at that time. Nobody even knew anything about him. I guess he was living here, actually, at that time. He must have been rather elderly, but it wasn't until he died and the property was up for sale and some knowledgeable guy from New York went through the house and saw these stuff and realized there was something there.
Isn't that marvelous? It's marvelous that it was eventually discovered, but too bad that it wasn't discovered properly. You know, he could appreciate
it. Well, I think since the beginning of time, every time, you know, one generation of painters has nothing to do with the generation younger. They're scared to death of it. And they don't want to open the door any wider than possible.
That really is kind of sad, but it's true. I think today we still have traditional painters here, and that's good. I love the watercolors you're doing this year, but I love the oils that you do, especially. I don't want to, because you seem to have a style that is totally your own.
Well, I had no training.
Is that fun?
That's fun.
By just
if you have training, you
so
can do what your teacher told you.
Exactly. That is wonderful. That's why you have such a personal and individual style that I think is really very exciting, very vibrant, different. It's masculine and yet it's very delicate and beautiful. It's just really, it's really quite, it's really caught my eye.
Nice words.
It's really caught my eye. Nice words, but what? I'd be glad to buy any painting that you decide to take the NSF sign off. How's that?
See you in the agent.
I'd love to see your work. So anyway, this was kind of a sleepy town, and then of artists and struggling families and industry and canal people and river people, and then the playhouse happened after the canal was closed. Right. And then the playhouse started.
Well,
and
suddenly
you see
people begin to come here,
right,
who had never been here before, because the playhouse brought a lot of actors and also one of the big influences in the town. A year before the playhouse had opened, by the name of Henrietta Cunningham, had bought Bill Nye's studio and turned it into a restaurant. And she had a terrible struggle. She was going to close, and was talking to me, and I said, well, hang on a little while longer. Not for any reason, I just said it. And she did, and suddenly the playhouse became an entity. And that changed her life completely.
And who was that? What restaurant was that in?
It was called the Topaz House.
Oh, the Topaz, my goodness.
And it was the only other restaurant in the area. It was Collins in Stockton.
Oh, I love that.
Which had operated as an actually open liquor serving restaurant all through the Prohibition years. They knew the right people in Trenton. And you could always get drinks from Collins.
I understand that's true. I think Ruth Worthington made the point that one of her husband's first job was to run the liquor into the Stockton Inn, and that's how he got his start. He really, we're not afraid, we're not ashamed to say that at the time. I remember it rather indistinctly. We used to have a few little bottles of things for an uncle of mine who was producing some very excellent booze in Chicago, and we would store some in our basement for him. But that was absolutely a terribly hushed up family secret. And now this is all coming out. These things are all, you know, because we realized that this was a...
well, speaking of running the liquor in, and the there were two Perry sisters who used to live in the Perry house in the summertime and then moved to Logan Inn in the wintertime because the Perry house had no heat.
Oh.
And